see you coming back in here with ducky jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
How could anybody go and sit in a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Alright, we've had dummy teens and debutantes aplenty. There's been experimentation, investigation, frank discussion, and eternal drama, but the championship is well underway and it's time to get serious. You're listening to the Three Man Weave podcast and we're back with our A-team lineup. Myself, Morris Brosnan, joined by two powerhouses in Mark Friday and Mick McCarthy. Welcome to the show. Lads, how's the form?
Oh, not too bad, not too
good,
bad.
Good, Morris. Like the intro there, it felt like the start of a song.
Yeah, it was been Mick, you've been here in a long time. This is your comeback after, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks off, yeah. I had a nice little rest. I'm back for... I'm back for the heart of the championship. I missed a couple of weeks, but I'm all right.
I decided to step away to let Cavan take centre stage last week. From that massive high, they've come to an unimaginable low with the news that he can't win the Roy Maher after losing yet again, undefeated.
Probably let me have the Cavan, have the podcast last week thinking, what's the worst he could do? And then I accidentally started a conspiracy theory that the dog was planted and that spread across the internet for the rest of the week. People were on forums and everything. I've got a good source on this, that dog was planted. We've for the record, I was joking. I don't think he was
actually. I think it was a Monaghan dog, if anything.
We've got a cracking show lined up. We're going to speak to Sean Duffy, the Fermanagh hurling manager, later on, because Fermanagh obviously only have one senior hurling club in the county and they now... are on the verge of winning the Laurie Maher. They're top, they're undefeated, and despite the fact that they're picking from one club. So this is an interview I wanted to do for a while about kind of the development of hurling in these so-called weaker counties. We're also going to talk about all the weekend's games, but there's only one place to start, lads, and that's McHale Park and Mayo. Tight enough looking McHale Park, all the things being said.
Small McHale Park, yeah. McHale Park's the story over Roscommon or Mayo.
Yeah, I mean...
at least here, at least in our discussions, for some reason.
Mayo fans seem to have this thing that their own ground or their own dimensions of their pitch doesn't really suit them.
Yeah, and like, normally you would say, what difference does it make? But I actually say, when I was watching the match on Saturday night, I did notice there's 65s, which there isn't on every football-only pitch, but there's 65s there, and they're very, very close to each other. I'd say about 5 metres between each other, And then... just watching the hurling yesterday then in Pearce Stadium, where obviously, Mayo's biggest rivals play their home football games, and there was at least 20, if not 25 metres between the 65s there. And you just think to yourself, in a game of football, that is a huge difference in the size of the pitch. That is it is at least 20 metres in the difference. Over the course of a game, you're talking about nearly a sixth of the size of the field in the difference. That makes a big deal. And if Mayo do want to play kind of expansive football, and funny enough, Galway don't. Galway play tight defensive, ground out football, not quite what Fermanagh were like yesterday, but not that far off. I don't think the massive Pearce Stadium, does them any favours. And it's funny because you don't really think of that. You don't think of the fact that, other than Croke Park being the wide open expanses and, that'll suit a team. You don't think of provincial grounds as having such a massive difference. Like, you're talking a good nearly 20% of the size of the pitch being variable. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, this all came up last year, really, when Tyrone brought the pitch in against Dublin and then blamed Sky Sports, weirdly, for narrowing it out.
I forgot about that.
Sky Sports did. No, that wasn't us at all.
That doesn't make any sense.
So the there's a minimum and a maximum length, right, that everyone has to abide to. So your minimum, you're talking about 130 to 145, and then versus your width, which is about 80 to 90 metres. So that's what you're talking about minimum. So McHale Park, just as it goes, is 137 by 82. So it's certainly not big, but it's not the smallest either. There's only 6 grounds in the country that claim to use the maximum dimensions possible. I'm wondering, can you name them?
Pearce Stadium.
Yeah.
Croke Park.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
As a rookie
but
mistake.
What about the wide open expanses of Croke Park? That a team won't, they can't show their true colours until they play there.
Croke Park is 144 metres by 86 metres. So the closest comparison is actually Markovic Park in Sligo, which is 142 by 90 metres. But it's still a considerable bit below what the maximum is there.
What's McHale Park then in lengthwise? Because I know it is quite wide.
Yeah, McHale Park is 137 metres, but it's the width is 82. So you're talking
about... it's 137 versus Croke Park being 144.
144, yeah.
Well, then they don't know how to measure 65 metres then on either side, because those 65s I think might be just put in a random place near the middle of the field, because they honestly, they couldn't possibly, that difference is insane. That difference is not only, what is it, 7 meters?
Yeah.
That it couldn't be.
You think,
because just look with your own eyes, the difference between the 265s in Croke Park and the difference between them in McHale Park.
Yeah.
Mark, it's more than 7 meters.
Mark, can you give me any other grounds that would claim to use the maximum?
Let me see. Caseman Park.
Caseman Park, you did, but... Yeah.
Clonus,
no.
Ooh, Clonus would be big. Why don't
Clarny.
Limerick. Semple
Stadium in Doyle, yeah. Cusick Park, Mark, Mick.
Right, yeah. Cusick Park is actually one of those grounds that you, like, I actually should have known that, because every year there'll be a thing going, oh, you know, Tip won't fancy it in the close, tight spaces of Cusick Park, and everyone's like, Cusick Park's a huge pitch. It's huge. It's just that it's the ground is tight.
But there's like...
The actual pitch isn't.
Perception has always been an issue, as we said here, and we mentioned on the podcast a few months ago. GA goals are 6.5 metres wide. You measure out 6.5 metres in measuring tape. Take one out now, anyone that has one on their person.
Not if you're driving the car.
Yeah, not if you're driving. Pull over first and get out on the hard shoulder. Measure out 6.5 metres and you will not believe us that goals are that wide, but they are indeed that wide.
Yeah, we actually did an experiment of that and we're shocked.
A demonstration in the office, yeah. The other two are O'Connor Park in Offaly and Dr. Hyde Park in Roscommon, both claim.
Dr. Hyde Park, Jesus, yeah. I wouldn't have thought that.
And the thing about this, right, is that... Why this is, there's a kind of a, there is a like one massive factor within that, and that's the idea that we're basically on the whim of like a groundsman, that he could take it in a couple of meters. Like, for example, Brewster Park, when I looked this up, claims to be 145 meters by 83 meters. Now, in reality, when you look at the amount of space that was out there at the weekend, it was far less than that.
Subject to change.
Like
when you buy a ticket.
But we did see Quigley taking a sideline that took a small deflection and went out for another sideline on the other side. Yeah.
So they're obviously not going to make it shorter, but they can make it tighter, which is, I guess, is what happened when you look at the amount of space that was available on both sidelines, as opposed to McHale Park, for example, which they clearly tried to maximise it.
Yeah, well, I suppose going back to the Mayo point, like, that suits... Fermanagh to have a tight pitch there. They're trying to bunch the game as much as possible. They're trying to absolutely have, trying to win a game 1 point to no score, really, like, you know. Mayo aren't playing that way, and it's just, it is funny, like, is there room to extend any, like, obviously they've made it as wide as possible, is there room to lengthen McHale Park at all? It's funny, because it was just something I noticed with the eye, but then I did see Mayo fans having a real discussion about this, talking about the fact that it's just their home ground is not suitable for their purpose as a team at the moment.
I don't know, it was a full back line there. It was I think might have been hoping that the Mayo half was a bit shorter last weekend with the amount of room that Roscommon forwards had.
Yeah.
It is like a word being said, it is small. Like, it's within 2 meters of the smallest ground in the country, which is
Fermanagh.
No, but you're very close.
Tyrone.
Leitrim.
No. It's a ground. It's the last ground where we would have seen Mayo lose in the championship.
Oh, Kildare's.
Yeah. Which is 135 by 80, which is tiny. I mean, that's as close, as small as you're going to get. We might as well talk about Mayo now. A game that was played in monsoon rains that we're also in the midst of right now, it sounds like. Apologies, that's coming true. The game itself, like, it's kind of a hard one to analyse. The one thing that kind of, you would look at a team like Mayo, for example, and Mark, we spoke about this recently, is this obsession with, like, singular stats, right? Like, it's so widespread in the game now. And I spoke previously on this podcast about being up at a coaching conference earlier this year and Aidan O'Rourke, watching him run the kick-out routines that he had. And, like, he was totally... You know, he didn't really care about the success rate of kickouts. What he cared about was the score conversion rates of kickouts. Like, it's not securing possession, it's what you're doing after that. And I thought that was so obvious with Mayo's mentality to winning Roscommon kickouts. Like, Roscommon were, in a sense, kind of brain dead with their kickouts for the first 10 minutes. And then you look at what Mayo actually did off them. So there was that stage where you had Jason Doherty kicking the ball, getting the ball straight away, and within a couple of seconds kicking it wide. The ball that landed right on Boland's chest, like literally in yards of space on his chest, and he kicks it right back to the goalkeeper, to O'Malley. There was the one where Evan Regan, the ball was turned over in the middle of the park, went into Evan Regan, who caught it in his 21, and managed to carry the ball back out outside his 45 without giving it off. And, like, these aren't... it feels like this is approached as if it's a free shot. Do you know what I mean? You secured a turnover from a kick out. It's a free shot, and it doesn't really matter if you don't convert it. And in reality, it's not. Like, it's a turnover. It's your chance at possession, and not utilizing it correctly is something that kind of haunts Mayo regularly.
Yeah, what was it that Whelan said? I can't remember what he said in the Sunday game. I think it was that Mayo only won Roscommon only won 42% of their own kick out and still won. I think the last week, Kevin McStay did a really good analysis as well on the Cavan Monaghan game and how well Monaghan did on the kick out. And that was actually another example of where when Cavan went long and like they didn't win many of them, they were hitting Grove McCarron all the time. There was a lot of times that Monaghan got players around and won the kick out, won the break. But when Cavan did actually get the break, it was a player coming out like Jerry Smith flying onto the ball and was straight through then with two players up front, a load of space. And if you remember, like, Darren McVitie's point that he got, that came from something like that. So it was like, it was a high risk one, but if you win it, you're getting converted in a score chance. The exact same then on Saturday night, as Kieran Whelan showed on the Sunday games, highlights showed that every time Roscommon actually did win their kick out, then they had a huge amount of space to attack into.
And like, I think that's actually the crux of what we're talking about here. It's like, there's teams who are obsessed about getting 90% plus, you know, actual possession and no sort of conversion, and then there's teams who don't care about that and actually go and look for it. Funnily enough, a classic example of that was Rouen's first point in the game. They actually analysed at halftime. Now, the analysis at halftime was wrong, but you wouldn't, you know, blame Peter Canavan for that because he doesn't have a huge amount of time turning around. But he was highlighting the fact, you know, Aidan O'Shea has his back turned to the ball and he is a primary possession winner. And like, that was a pre-called play. It came in from the sideline that the idea was that they totally vacate. Their forwards all stand to the right. They vacate the left of the pitch. It's just a ball over the top. Rouen is faster. Like, he got it over Tiger Rourke. And then after that, two forwards peel off and it's a point straight away off. Like, that's planned for it, but what they haven't clearly planned for is when they actually win possession back. And it's funny, the only real score they kicked off the Roscommon directly from a Roscommon kick out winning it was thanks to their backs. It was Higgins breaking a ball and Paddy Durkin running off his shoulder in second half, and he kicked a lovely score, steadied himself, didn't like shoot on sight. And it actually goes back to a conversation we've had before about hurling as well. Like, there's a lot of people obsessed about, you know, we've secured possession from this book, what are we going to do next? And then you look at teams like Cork, or even the Brendan Cullen analysis at the weekend was perfect on this. It's not necessarily what the stat itself, it's what happens beyond that.
Yeah. So it was actually, like, even before the game, Daly was talking about the Wexford puckouts and pointing out that they could be a problem for Fanning, and it was actually perfect. There wasn't a stat mentioned. Like, I love stats, and I think that the more we can talk about them, the better, but sure. It illustrates the importance of putting them into context. There's no point in talking about turnover stats if you don't talk about turnover conversion. You know, it's like, it's an irrelevant stat if you do just treat it as a free play, as you said, instead of actually turning it into a possession. But, like, Daly did an analysis on Fanning's puckouts before the game where he didn't mention a stat once. They didn't say how many they lost or however, but I got a better understanding of it. And once the first half started and it played out exactly like that, which is, well, if Wexford get their short puckouts right, it basically creates a score chance. That's the way they're set up. But it's dangerous and it doesn't work out a lot of the time. When they go long, they generally tend to lose far too many. You know, brilliant. Then Brendan Cummins kind of takes on the goalkeeper's thing and talks about how his technique is not good enough for short puckouts. And, you know, which was amazing. Oh, which savage, it was so good. It's basically a golf shot. You're not going contested. You should have a set swing and you should be hitting it between your elbow and your hip, but not down at your quad because you can't. Like, that is, I've never heard a hurling swing described like that in year ever, I don't think. You know, it's never been done that scientifically. It's great to know that it actually does happen, you know, in actual coaching.
Yeah.
You know, and that Cummins was coached that way by Eamon O'Shea, I think he was saying. I think he said he was sick to his teeth of hearing it. But, that was the type of analysis you want, because I watched the first half of that game, a dire game, with a much better understanding of what was going wrong for Wexford. It wasn't just sloppiness. It was the fact that this is something that they need to do to establish their game. But when it gets wrong, it's obviously terribly dangerous.
Even on that, the Cummins analysis and that was absolutely brilliant, because he showed you, A, Galway have worked out the call for Wexford Puckouts, B, where it was going wrong, and then put it into context about what they need to do to fix it. And that is all the analysis that you want, regardless of whether or not he incorporates stats. He explained exactly what was the issue and how to solve it in, like, the space of, again, doing it at half time in the space of 30 seconds.
Yeah, definitely. Just on Mayo, like, I think to be going around the house a little bit, one of the things that I think it's a very, very fixable situation for Mayo. Like, because if you look at the actual performance in a lot of respects, like they obviously conceded two goals early, puts them behind, they're catching up for the whole game. When they were playing well, I thought they tackled brilliantly. I thought they were just in on top of player. Like, I thought their backs and midfielders were just very, very tenacious. They looked like they were fully up for it. My worry is that they obviously had like a head situation, the freeze and stuff like that. That's not all technique. The issue of Dermot O'Connor calling over Kevin McLaughlin at the end and it taking a long, you know, with this being out, I don't trust myself to kick this point here. You come and do it. This guy comes over. It's obviously set it up to be even a bigger thing than it was, was what, a 25-meter free that they should have just been tapping over the bar. It just made it this big pressure kick. That all stuff I feel like Horan can fix over the next couple of months. A couple of handy draws, you get as far as the Super 8s. Like, they didn't look as out of sorts as they did last year.
No, like, there's a massive thing about narrative here where, like, they lose a game by a point having conceded a ridiculous goal and missed an easy free at the end.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's their, again, a tragedy and all this. Whereas, like, they could have easily won that game and it would have went, geez, that was a tight enough game for Mayo, but you look at they're over it now.
Yeah, against a good team. It's their fourth Connacht final in a row for Roscommon, and nobody's even talking about that. Like, it's not a miracle win or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, and it's brilliant that you brought that up, because that's actually what I want to move on to next, because there was a lot of Roscommon fans pretty unhappy with the analysis after the game and also on the Sunday game last night about the fact that it's all about Mayo and why can't people reference them. And I actually think what Roscommon did is pivotal for the sport right now and the direction that Gaelic football is moving in, because Roscommon, we on this podcast, the three of us at the very start of the year, talked about like what is relative success for Roscommon. Do they have to get to a Super 8 if they're going to abandon their free-flowing style of last year? And they've improved it drastically, and it goes to show that there's a template there, that you don't have to go like an all-out extreme all-out attack or an all-out extreme ultra defensive, that you can have a nice balance, which is what, like, the way Roscommon even set up, right? They had Walton Harney playing out in front of Cox and Andy Glennon, who came in at the end and decided the two. He had Craig and Murta on the bench and Enda Smith, because the system that they had didn't necessarily play for that. But he still had like a real tough defence. The three Dailies, I thought, were all three of them are really, really impressive and really kind of tenacious players. Tiger Rourke in the middle of the park looks like an absolute machine. He then still has like a reasonable defensive setup in terms of like getting men back, but at all times keeping two forwards up so you can move the ball up quickly, as opposed to what Fermanagh did against Donegal. And then you get this insult. We're going to put a clock of 30 seconds on any sort of
rant
or negative. So I'm going to start now about, so
this is like what we're only allowed give out.
It's a 30 second rant clock that we've got installed just to stop us going too negative.
This is an anti give out podcast, but some things need to be said. And
some giving out needs to be done.
Okay.
Right. Fermanagh, it's a total insult to players from Fermanagh to claim that this is as good as it can get for them. Like, the idea that they can be hard to beat as opposed to set up to win. When you look at like the way Roscommon set up, for example, they could have had Corrigan and Quigley inside in the centre, have these like hard-working transition players, the likes of Jones, the Cullen brothers, the young 19-year-old who kicked his name has gone from me because I'm under pressure, who kicked the score from the sideline and kicked an outrageous score in the league game as well. Like, they're quality players, really high-standard footballers. You see what success they've had in the secondary school level as well. It's an absolute...
30 seconds is up, Morris. Do you feel better?
A small bit, yeah, but not necessarily.
You don't feel like you got your point across.
Time these better.
Look, I'll take up the mantle when I go with when we move on to the Fermanagh thing in a minute, because that's going to be my 30-second rant as well. Hopefully I'll keep it to 30 seconds. But I think on what you're saying about Roscommon doing it right, before we talk about what's done it wrong, halfway through the first half, when I was kind of like, I didn't kind of look at the team, I was like, where's Enda Smith, where's Dermot Murta, you know? And I think Dermot Murta had been named, hadn't he?
And
he's left out. So you're kind of and then the commentator says they're all there on the bench and they're ready to be sprung, and I'm like, this is a brilliant, if you, especially when they get a good start the way they did, it's like, if you have players that good, whether they fit into a system or not, like, you know, to come on with 20 minutes to go, the freshness, especially in the forwards, like the freshness of that, to just add that little bit of bite at the end of a game with these really, really good players, all really experienced. So reminds me of kind of Limerick springing Shane Dowling, you know, and just having that like as good a player as there is in your team, but only coming on with 20 minutes to go. It's such a fill-up. Like, and I think like Mayo were getting on top, and it's like Mayo went ahead for the first time with their last score. Like, you kind of, in any other game, you'd be thinking, right, that's it, that's the end of Roscommon. But Roscommon actually became the better team again then, because they probably had the better players on the pitch by the end of it, like between all the subs.
Yeah, Fintan Craig and Donny Smith were really involved at the end. Ennis might have gotten, but even in the last score, I think.
Craig kicked the score,
Craig
yeah.
Craig kicked the score. Yeah. I think Donny Smith as well was the one who set it up, or he definitely set up two of the last attacks.
If you ever want to see, a really quick aside, if you ever want to see a reason why Paul Murphy is playing the way he is for Kerry in terms of, you know, like literally not passing the halfway line, even to the extent where if he is required to run forward, he turns back and holds that centre. It's that last score when, in the first half, Craig pulled Plunkett all sides in terms of pulling him out of the middle there. Then the second half, Keegan kind of came into the game really strongly and took him out of it. But that score, the amount of space that Craig had in the centre there, after, like, this is the problem when you have players, really hard-working players, but not necessarily a kind of a structure around it, is that you get six Mayo defenders all on the left side hunting the ball, and when the ball's moved across, there's no one there to stop them. We'll move on.
Implement a blanket.
Well, yeah.
Mick.
Yeah.
You've got 30 seconds.
Okay. I want to talk about Fermanagh as well, like, because I don't care. It's more the attitude of people that say, "Ah, well, sure, look, they have to do what they have to do. They don't have great resources, and sure, aren't they competitive? And they're in Division 2, everything like that, right? Fine. Why do I have to like that? That was an awful game to watch. We have had a really, really good couple of weeks of football. It looks like the blanket era is over. The game is getting faster. It's much more exciting. It's having a good year versus hurling for all the arguments. But Fermanagh just went out. They had every man behind the 45 after 25 seconds of the game last night, and they never come out of it again.
Mick uses time a lot more effectively there than I did. I think you have to.
I still feel like I got no points across. 30 seconds isn't long enough.
You have to build up esteem, don't you? It's like,
Mark, I hope you've learned the lessons of the previous two before you get going. I wanted to cover about six or seven subjects in my rant. How am I going to talk about crap hurling now?
You can't even say those words.
That's just a legal binding thing anyway, nothing to do with this.
Final bout of negativity.
Yeah, exactly.
the final bout of negativity is over to you, Mark.
When do I go? Buzz me in.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, first up, I want to talk about Roscommon and the disgrace that they couldn't even give Cavan more than 7 days of joy. We got a big win, then Roscommon goes, "Oh yeah, should we just go out and beat Mayo now and steal your thunder?" Secondly, I want to talk about the disgraceful thing on Fermanagh yesterday. It wasn't their tactics. It was the fact that Rory Gallagher was managing the team wearing a pair of shorts and full-length Under Armour tights. He's a manager, for God's sakes. John Milo wears suit trousers. Now, you don't wear suit trousers, but Jesus, at least a pair of tracksuit bottoms. Why are you wearing tights? You're only managing on the sideline.
You're out of time.
I might just... that was probably the most effective use of the time. Yeah, well, lad, Rory Gallagher, though, like, I mean, he set up a team that was even more defensive than a defensive team he took over, right? And this isn't my rant. This isn't, you know, they closed off the pitch to make it even tighter. It looked like there was going to be a nil-all draw for the first about 15 minutes of the game. Right, all of that said, Rory Gallagher gets props, in my opinion, for being so close to the BBC mic that you could hear every instruction
literally
he gave
for the
entire match. And most of them included a fuck in there, to be honest.
I'd like to apologise to listeners who take any offence.
That poor commentator, who I have to say, I only heard him in the last 2 nights. I don't think he's the most experienced guy in the world. He's getting better. And
Thomas Liblock.
Is he not? Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
He's experienced. He would have done more presenting, I think. And then has moved into the commentary, because Summerby would have.
He's not bad. I got used to him by the end of the match after having seen him in two games over 2 days. But he just did spend a lot of time having to apologise for the unfortunate language.
I also love Mark McHugh having commentated on Ryan McHugh.
Yeah.
He even did. He's like, "Ryan McHugh, bad ball from him there." See that point?
When he's talking about, like, oh, a sub coming on, he goes, "Oh, Ryan to be telling me about him, he's a monster in training," but then when Ryan actually does something on the ball, he's Ryan McHugh.
Yeah, you're saying Ryan, speaking of, one of them was, he was telling the story about how Ryan was telling him that they called Paddy McGrath the animal because of how good he is in training. The man that used poo-pooed when I suggested him was one of the most underrated players.
He should have been sent off yesterday. Without a doubt, he should have been sent off. He took a guy around the neck, got a yellow card for it, and then 2 minutes later had a yellow card foul that was just completely ignored by the referee.
I thought that foul was kind of soft. The second one. Like, your man kind of was going down like a sack of spuds. I don't know if it was the second.
I
thought he had a really good game, especially the first half.
Good player.
I think it was, though, that they went, "Let Paddy McGrath have it." They're like, "This lad's not going to shoot or whatever."
There was a literal, one of those Manny Gallagher moments was when you could hear him literally scream, "Let him have it."
The other thing about Fermanagh is, if you're going to be so defensive, like, did you see the fist to point that Paddy McBearty got, where a big long high ball came in, and there's so many of them in there that nobody knew who to come and get the ball, and the fullbacks ran out and the keeper stayed where he was,
yeah,
and it just bounced and McBearty fisted it over the bar, and you're like, how could you get, if the only thing you do is defend, how could you get something so wrong as that, you know?
Just a final word on that, like, my point is that isn't that I think Fermanagh are a very good team, and I think they could be an even better team with slight adjustments, and I just, the patronising attitude that they're kind of towards them, it's not, like, Fermanagh fans shouldn't be offended by this. It's, and if anything, it's, you know, give them the credit that they deserve, and also play to the ability that they clearly have, which means a bit more of adjustment to, like, not go out to lose a game, to, like, damage imitation, but yeah, ultimately to lose a game. Yeah.
They couldn't win it. And they have, you have to, I think you have to at least try to win a game, and if that means a mixture of the two or some kind of leeway. They had none at all. They had no forwards. Like, there was a couple of times a guy caught a ball in there and he was running, and I was like, what was he supposed to do? On the sideline, like, I know it was a tight sideline, but there was nothing he could do. Like.
A more positive Fermanagh story is the story of their hurlers, who look like they're about to win the Laurie Maher Cup. There was a great tweet from Joe Brody after the Fermanagh Cavan game. There was also football on, but we won't talk about that, where he tweeted about... he tweeted out a picture of their team sheet from the day, and of 15 players, 14 were from the one club. Their manager is also from the same club, and we'll hear from him later on the show. But next, we're going to chat about tier twos on this idea of second tiers, which looks like it's coming for Gaelic football. What's that coming over the hill? Is it a
Tony Johnston? Is it a Tony Johnston? What's that
coming over the hill?
Is it Tony Johnston? Is it Tony Johnston?
Right, lads, we've got our first qualifier draw. We'll just run through that quickly. So it's Louth against Antrim, Down against Tipperary, Leitrim against Wicklow, Wexford against Derry, Offaly against London, Monaghan against Fermanagh,
ugh,
Carlow against the losers of Kildare and Longford, and Westmeath against Waterford. A lot of really even games, a lot of games that you'd be tipping very excited down about. Tipping
good
down.
Game.
The Wexford-Derry could be a really interesting game as well. Monaghan Fermanagh even.
Yeah, I won't be watching it, but a couple of games.
But the big news of the day is that it looks like we're going to have our second tier as of next year. So John Horan has said that they're going to push ahead with it. They're going to call for a special congress in September/October, and that would give teams 3 months to mull over this before they would try and implement it. It's been his drum he's banged pretty much relentlessly. I think it's the legacy that he wants to leave behind, is as generally is the case in this scenario. And interestingly, we actually did an interview, we were at an event with John Horan last September, right? And this is what he said at that time. So he said, it wouldn't mean the teams that go into a tier two wouldn't play in qualifiers. The qualifiers would be a smaller competition restricted to maybe teams. So this is my own personal feelings for this, but we would have division one or two teams that go on to a provisional final. So this, what he's hinting at here is the fact that they would drop down to a second tier, not that they would be automatically cut off in a second tier. He didn't really expand on that today, so we still don't know what about that initial format.
It's like the old kind of Tommy Morphy Cup format, which
where everybody starts at the time and then it drops and it becomes like a shield competition.
I'd rather they didn't do anything if they're going to do that.
I agree completely, yeah.
Like, that has obviously, it's not worked in the past, and also anyone that has to do that, play in that at club level, knows themselves that it's like, it's such a nonsense. You're like, you kind of, your season is over and you just wanted to finish, and you're adding on these extra fixtures when there's already fixture congestion. And the other interesting thing, I suppose, from that was that he was also this morning talking about sorting, fixing the fixtures, and was talking with the committee that was going to be put in place to do that. So obviously these are going hand in hand. And I just wonder, would he be able to... I can't see how he'd be able to add on more fixtures like that to counties. Like, again, we go, oh, we're fixing the club fixtures by adding on more county
but
fixtures.
But sure, that's what they did last time.
That's what I'm saying.
That's again, what they did last time with the Super 8s and the extra hurling games. Was that whole Congress, the whole move for fixture, for revamps in that Congress was because of the CPA and the club, and that's where Club Month came from and everything like that. That was the entire catalyst. And what ended up happening was a load of extra games in the county championship in both sports. It was bananas.
There's another massive aspect to all of this as well, which is the fact that we're going to see a second tier in Gaelic football in 2020. The current broadcasting deals for the Gaelic football championship, which already they can't fit in enough games, expires
for both championships
in 2022. So that would mean we have 2 years of an additional increase in games, but once again, the same coverage.
I did have to.
But it is and it isn't, because are they going to show any of tier two in on live games? You know, you'd have to say you doubt it. You know, maybe a final and that takes away one game.
And it's funny, right? Because I have relentlessly banging the drum about there being a huge appetite out there, and you look at the people, amount of people who watch Fitzgibbon Cup semi-finals, and that people would obviously watch Joe McDonagh Cup games. And then at the weekend, Michael Halloran, the Radio Kerry journalist, was up at the Joe McDonagh game between Kerry and Westmeath. Kerry had an unbelievable win against Westmeath, which has thrown that competition wide open. And there was just one line in it that was a real shame, a line from his copy here. So I read this on Facebook, but up from the Kerry Sports page. And just one line to pick out is, "A pity only 10 supporters showed up to see this exhibition of true grit and skill. 10 Kerry fans travelled up to that game." And if that's the case, like, what do we really have a case for these games to be put on television or for more coverage to be afforded to it when, whatever about the rest of the country, people within the county clearly don't care about it?
It's still chicken and egg.
It's hard
though.
To argue. Yeah, it is hard to argue. Now, Kerry wouldn't have expected, I don't think, to win that game. Sure. That was a massive surprise for them to beat Westmeath. I think the whole country was kind of shocked by it, and it's blown the whole competition open. And I think it's worth mentioning, outside of the problems here that are really, you know, and it's fair enough, and everyone blames the media, the competition is actually brilliant. That is, I think it's a class competition between teams at the same level. You don't know who's going to win from one week to another, and it's really good for the development, you would hope. But you know, all of those caveats aside about them not expecting to win, you would think that a team would have a core support of more than 10 people. Like, you know, like that's families not even going to see their kids play. Like, you know,
and that of that 10, I think a lot of them was like a carload from Ballyduff who bring people to every single game to support Shane Conway. Like, and that, I think that's the real kind of, like, tragedy is too strong a word, but the real shame about all of this is the fact that, like, you've got a guy who is, like, as close to Kerry's version of a David Clifford as they're going to get. Like, and we all saw him in the Fitzgibbon Cup, an outrageously talented hurler. This game will be on TG Cahir, on their highlights program on Monday night. I'd really encourage people to watch those clips. Like, he hits 13 points, but there's a score for Mikey O'Leary. Mike O'Leary hits a point, and watch the way Shane Conway set up that score. Like, the footage of that is absolutely incredible. Like, pulling three defenders out, a little shimmy, and then turning back, and, like, as if instinct, knowing where he is, and a perfect laser ball across to set up that score. Like, it was ridiculous, an outrageous piece of skill. And the only hope that I would have is the fact that that score, people will see that score on Monday night, it'll be tweeted out. People will kind of realise that they have, like, a true gem within Kerry, like a proper hurling star within their country, and that might kind of drum up some support. That's what you hope coverage will do. Yeah. But the fact that there isn't even, like, an inkling of it initially is kind of disappointing.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And, like, I think going back to Mark's chicken and egg, though, like, I suppose one of the things we should do, and we're probably as guilty of it as anyone, is stop kind of, like, demanding the media pay attention to something that doesn't have the, like, you know, the attention. But we need small steps. So one of them was, like, they spent a significant, obviously Brendan Cummins was there and that was the reason for it, but they spent a good time talking about that match on the live Sunday game yesterday. They talked about the Offaly situation. I think there'll be a good bit of chat about Offaly and Antrim. I think there'll be some media coverage of that building into it. It's the biggest game in Offaly's, you know, nearly their history this weekend. I think the fact that it is on to that TG Carter have taken that mantle now to put that on the highlight show and to try and get a little bit of coverage, I think they'll do that more regularly. Plus, you have a competition that is just forcing people to talk about it a little bit, because it can go anyway, and because anyone can win every, it just needs that little bit more, and it just becomes more part of the discussion and not just this example as to why you shouldn't have a two-tier football championship, which is what it's been in the national media for the last year and a half. Just it's okay for something to be gradual, I think, is probably my point.
And I suppose, you know, talking about that, just to bring back to football for a second here, right, if we're going to see the proposal that John Horan has outlined on Monday, that means that Cork, Derry would all be cut off into the second tier. Yeah. Teams that have kind of a huge heritage in history and would certainly feel like they've diminished. And
Down,
exactly. Yeah. I also, one thing that we probably haven't discussed enough, actually, is the fact that players have shown no appetite for this. Like, we've spoken to four different captains on this show this year, all of whom talked about the fact that they would hate to lose out in the initial. Like, success is relative. You can't, like, they're not, maybe they won't have aspirations to win an All-Ireland title, but you look at what it meant to Carlow to get to a Leinster semi-final last year. Leash, by the way, Leash, who were in Division 4, Leash wouldn't have been in a Leinster final last year. They would have been in a second tier if this proposal came in the way it did. That kind of stuff, I think, is a lot more important as well, that the teams have kind of a chance at the big day thing. Like, I would be really hesitant to mould this to outside influences and not let players have their own voice and kind of demand heard as well.
Yeah, like, there's two things in that. One is that sometimes, you know, you just have to enforce it and say that this is going to benefit you. Like, I'm sure a lot of club players, if that are playing junior intermediate around the country, if they're given the option to play in the senior championship, would probably take it. But that's not the way the thing works. And, you know, you end up with actual, as Joe Brawley would say, vibrant championships across all tiers within each county. And then secondly, there is the other option of, which could make the most sense, is just flipping the league and the championship. Forget about the back door, get rid of the back door in the championship, run it off like the FA Cup, and maybe still keep your provincial championships if you want. Run it off, you play Ulster, you play your All-Ireland series. At most, you're playing, six, seven games to win an All-Ireland. And that's seen, though, as the secondary cup. Maybe it's called whatever cup. And the All-Ireland League Championship, whatever you want to call it, is like the league system with some sort of knockout thing at the end.
And is that not the cop out of this as well, though? The fact that he's totally content to push through a second tier without addressing what the major issue within Gaelic football right now is, the provincial system. That's the big problem.
The biggest cop out would be what you were suggesting earlier, which was to have it as
a drop down.
As you play the provincial, you play the qualifiers, and then you play this. Because, like, We don't know whether a proper B championship like Mark is describing will work eventually. It might, you know what I mean? Do you force this on players who think they don't want it, but it ultimately helps football because Longford could go and win a B championship and it's the biggest victory they'll ever have, for example. That's always been my long term plan. But we know for a fact it's not going to work if they do it this way, if they make it another Tommy Murphy Cup. I was listening to Brian Kavanagh on News Talk on Saturday talking about how they used to approach the Tommy Murphy Cup in Longford. It was like the end of the season and nobody wanted to be there. And you talk about lads going to America and stuff like that, you know, anyway, at the best of times. How are you going to stop them from doing that when they've got like a nothing competition to play for, like, that they don't want? It's just not going to work if they do that kind of cop out. It's funny looking at Louth against Dublin, right? 26 points. I think everyone will agree Louth have no business in a competition with Dublin at the moment, you know.
Yeah.
However, one way I've been looking at it, and it's just my opinion has changed by the amount of people we've talked over the last couple of years, and I don't think it's as cut and dry as I once did, whatever about anyone else. If Louth got a different draw and didn't have Dublin in the second round, in the quarterfinals, and they got Kildare, say, or Meath, you know, whatever, you know, someone who's, they're a level below, but they could beat on a given day, should that opportunity be taken away from them because they can't ever beat Dublin, Kerry, or Tyrone, maybe?
Yeah.
And that's probably it. They could give anybody else a game on their day, you know? Like, there's a top tier, and then there's kind of everybody else, which is the same as it's always been. You know, everybody else is like everybody from kind of like Mayo down is kind of like the same level above the weaker teams that they've always been.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that is the crux of this, right? Like, if this is the solution, what's the problem? Because you've got, is there necessarily a huge gap between what, as we're going to see, Division 1 and 2 and 3 and 4? If that is the case, why did Longford come within a width of post of beating Kildare, a Division 3 team against Division 2 teams? Again, that wouldn't happen if this is going to be cut off the way it is. Is the problem not that there's a top 6 and then a massive drop off from that? And if that is the case, like, he's talking about the idea that there's an appetite for, you know,
but the top 6, that the 8th team beat the 4th team, if you want to look at it that
like
way.
There was Hammers and Super Ace last year. Like, there was Hammers and Super Ace last year. And if the appetite is there, as he thinks there is, for a Tier 2 championship, I'm sure there's a lot of appetite there to level out the funding and the resources that are afforded to counties as well, which seems like a much bigger issue than maybe what this kind of window dressing will do.
Yeah.
Just on it, though, I do agree with Brawley, or maybe Brawley agrees with me, given that we talked about it on this podcast before he brought up the Sunday game, but that it should be 3 tiers. And then you would have Longford, the likes of Longford and Kildare
each other.
I wonder if, like, a better solution at the moment is to do something closer to a seeded championship. So that instead of provincials, you have, you know...
But then you're guaranteeing that these games are going to happen. It would be solving a problem that with the actual cause of the problem. So
if Louth have those big days, they end up playing Dublin. Like, as if they get through a Kildare, then they end up playing Dublin, and fine. But at least they've had their moment in
but
the championship.
But if they're seeded, would they not be drawn against the likes of Dublin?
No, I'm saying seeded as in byes.
Oh,
true. So Dublin don't play until Dublin, Kerry, Tyrone, whoever. Maybe it's the provincial champions or whatever, don't play until a later stage of the championship. Yeah.
The other thing I think still is a good idea is that the winner of it gets back into the senior All-Ireland. in a, like the eighth that team year. Or the quarter final or something that has played a little bit earlier.
Yeah, the way that they do in the Joe McDonough, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, two teams are, like, the Joe McDonough thing is interesting because, like, there are two teams of the five that will go into the All-Ireland Championship.
We will see this year, yeah.
Yeah, and we know that, like, you know, they don't seem to have that much of a chance, so it's not talked about that much. But if a similar situation was done in the football, you know, those teams you would actually argue would give someone a run for their money. You know, you just don't want to put them in too late, I suppose.
Right, that's enough of that. We'll talk to Sean Duffy next of the Fermanagh Herders.
It's about those four keywords: commit, focus, believe, yeah, and you can achieve. Carlo have achieved after 33 years in the wilderness, and well done.
All right, last weekend in the Laurie Maher Cup, there was a brilliant result for Fermanagh, a 2-13-0-15 victory over Lancashire. It leaves them top of the table and undefeated, and we've got Sean Duffy, their manager, on the line now. Sean, how's it going?
Not so bad, Morris. All right.
Come here, at the start of the year, obviously you just missed out on promotion from Division 3B. Was your aspirations always to try and win the Laurie Maher?
Well, but we also had aspirations on doing well today, because we know we were a small panel, but we had a few young boys in the day. We were a talented panel, and the first day out against Sligo in the league, we felt we should have got something out of that game, and we were beat by a point ultimately, but we didn't get to the league final. Then we had a fairly good league long for being all right, but we beat Leitrim and beat Cavan, so it was progress from the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because like we speak to a lot of kind of what you'd call the so-called weaker counties, and they talk about the idea that, you know, it's not only about results, it's also about performances and aspiring for improvements there as well.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Winning is good, surely, but when you can see improvement in a team as well, there's a lot of satisfaction in that. We, myself and Charlie Toe over the team, we've seen a lot of improvement in the league, you know, even the first day in the league, as I said, the Sligo game, and you know, we've seen what Sligo have done since. Sligo went on and they've won their first two Nicky Record games, so that's give us confidence as well for the Laurie Maher that we're in now at the minute.
Sean, how difficult is it to try and, I suppose, be competitive when you've got such a, as you mentioned there, a limited panel to choose from in Fermanagh?
It's very difficult, Morris. There's no good in saying it's not. And you know, even the way championships are run now, week on week, I know we get a fortnight now to lead them, but generally they run week on week. And in small panels, if you pick up an injury at all, you know, especially the key men, you can be left threadbare, as the man says. You know, we're a one club county. So it's not as if we do get a few injuries or whatever, we just can't stroll around the county to pick up players because they're not there. Anybody that can hurdles on our squad. So it is difficult, definitely is, yeah.
And on that team, right, I mean, like, for those that don't know, obviously, Lisbell, you are that one club that you mentioned, your own club too. Like, what's the presence of hurling like within Fermanagh? Is it just limited to that pocket, or is there anything beyond that?
There's in this last couple of years, there's pockets kind of stuff happening, yeah, in Enniskillen, Beleek, Ballinalak. There's bits of things happening there on the 14. They're intending to get an under 14 league going the year, or under 15 league. So there's a small window there, or there's small hopes, I suppose. But ultimately it takes a lot. You know, we're a footballing county, or a proposed footballing county, and getting people to bring it on to within them clubs, getting people to bring it on to the minors, seniors, you know, is difficult. Not alone players, but if you know what I mean, help from it within them clubs to promote hurling. They tend to do it at under, they tend to do it at underage a bit, but when they get older, it seems to fall away. You know.
Yeah, and in your own experience, is there enough of an appetite, whether that be from within the county or even, you know, the GAA hierarchy, to try and grow the game in places like Fermanagh?
Well, I would say it's lukewarm.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to start getting into county boards because I work with county boards and all that. But you know, I would imagine lukewarm would be where I would say that is.
Yeah, and that's from both within the county and also from the GAA itself, is it?
Both within the county, and I would even say in county boards. You know, and as I say, you know, we're a footballing county. We're perceived as a footballing county. You know, even the likes of Enniskillen Gaels, it's hard. I know there's good men, a couple of good men there trying hard to hold it at the underage level, but it is difficult for them. But you know, Scotland would be very much seen second best, you know, in the town of Enniskillen. So, same in Ballinalak. So, But there is bits going on, and you know, where there's a spark, I suppose, you know, it could go into greater things. That's our hope.
Yeah, Sean, how much of a frustration is that for you? Like, I know obviously the Corrigans were pretty handy hurlers, but they're obviously playing football at the minute. I know even within your own family, I know like you've got some pretty talented footballers also playing hurling as well. Like the idea that there's maybe even in competition must be quite frustrating in terms of that they're constantly losing players to the other code.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I have a lot of my own children who won a Hogan Cup medal this year, and I, you know, there's no guarantees anything, but I would imagine in a year or two there'll be footballers looking at them. But it is what it is, Morris. You know, I suppose, I don't know, Kieran Corrigan and Danny Tague was in their panel and they're on the football panel. I suppose they're getting more exposure in football as well, whatever. But yeah, it is difficult. You know, we're small enough without losing players to the inter-county football team, but we're a small enough bunch to be losing. And generally when you lose a player to a football panel, he's generally a quality player as well. If you know, he's generally a top hurler as well. So, they're massively difficult in small picks, yeah.
And yet, despite that, you're obviously undefeated in the Lloyd Maher Cup. As we mentioned earlier, you had a great league campaign. We're very close to getting promoted there. To what extent is the growth of the game your focus, or are you more focused on kind of this short-termism and trying to get the county successful?
Well, at this moment, we're more focused on winning Lloyd Maher. You know, definitely so. You know, we've one foot in a final. We've led 2-1-2. You know, we're getting the whole park as a good carrot too to the boys. We won that in 15, so we have boys that's been there and done it, but we also have a lot of young boys that would be a great experience to get to Coe Park. So that's really where we're at this minute. That's where all our focus is. But of course, I'm always on the pro hurling. I'm not always a hurling man. So, but at this minute, that's Lloyd Maher, trying to get to a Lloyd Maher final is our main aim at this minute.
Yeah, of course. And Sean, just while we're on this team, right? I mean, today, earlier on the show, even we were talking about the second tiers, which we're going to see in Gaelic football, it looks like, next year. And obviously, there's been a huge amount of revamps of the hurling championship and maybe kind of debates about the merits within that. Now, you're obviously successful within the Lloyd Maher, but there is kind of a sense that there isn't enough being done to develop those so-called weaker counties. What has your own experience of that been?
Oh, I would go with, you know, I'd be 100% in that. There's never enough done from Crow Park or from higher up to promote it in the weaker counties. You know, it's just an argument that can go on forever, but, you know, they're trying to promote it overseas. And of course, it has to be done too. Promote it in America and promote it all over the place, this 10, 11 aside hurling and all that. But there's, you know, somebody from me, they come from Fermanagh, or I'm sure Chavin or Leitham, you know, we'd love to have full-time coaches and from Crow Park and try and promote it within the weaker counties or so-called counties. I would feel it's not happening, but you know, we would get very little help from even from Ulster. We wouldn't get much help, so it is what it is. But it's just a bit frustrating at times when you see even the likes of Dublin. You know, I'm not in Dublin or anything like that, a big city county. You know, how many full-time coaches now they would have in hurling, but it doesn't happen north of the border or in the weaker counties, as far as I can see.
And so that's a really interesting team, right? Because we've often heard that the idea of a tier is there to try and improve counties, but the fact is that if they're kind of cut off and there's no investment there, that they're obviously not going to be able to improve and kind of catch up. And I'm kind of curious, what is the kind of stuff that you would like to see happen? Like, where what would you like to see the Crow Park implement so that Fermanagh hurling can grow the way it should?
Well, what I would love to see is a full-time coach in Fermanagh, a full-time hurling coach, a pure hurling man. I when I say that, I hope nobody, I'm offending nobody by if any coach was in the past or that maybe was coming from either code or maybe an ex-code, but I would like to see a pure hurling man as a hurling coach in Fermanagh in the schools, you know, a full-time hurling coach with nothing, only hurling in his head. So, you know, that's what I would love to see. And in the schools and in them clubs that's trying to get going, then the skills, the Bellinorex, the Beliques, you know, that's what I would love to see, a full-time hurling coach within the schools and within them clubs that's trying to get off the ground.
Yeah, and I suppose for that to happen, there has to be an appetite both from Crow Park, the GA, and also within the county as well.
There has to be, yes, most definitely so, yeah. definitely within the county as well, it has to be, it would have to be done. You know, there is full-time football coaches. That's where I would really love to see more of a full-time hurling coach, a hurling man, even if he be somebody from down south or certainly with a hurling background and a hurling knowledge, promoting the games within our county.
Yeah,
I think it would be massive.
Finally, just before you go, I mean, last year in the Roy Macker Cup, you finished at the bottom of it with just a point. This year, it's been a huge kind of turnaround. That improvement, where did that come from?
Well, that improvement has come from we didn't lose so many players going out the older age, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and we got an influx of young talent. Kieran Duffy, I mentioned there, Nathan Timney, Jimmy Tormey, Brian McPhillips. We got an influx of talented youth, which revamps any squad and gives fresh legs and fresh hope. And plus the fact that we had injuries last year as well, so some are more experienced men, John Duffy and the boys like that. And they are, thanks be to God, they're injury free the year. So, as well, Morris, we had a bad couple of years there, but we were lucky in games, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of games, you know, you can lose three games and, you know, lose them lately, and that's what happened to us. So, but the main reason for the turnaround is that influx of youth, which is invaluable in any squad.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see a positive finish of the year and promotion for Manor. Sean, thanks a million for taking the call today.
Thanks, Morris. Good man. Cheers.
Savage stuff from Sean there. We're out of time, but the people have spoken, and in response to that, we're going to have a second preview show out this Friday. So we'll preview all the weekend's games and play against the handicaps there. Keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, take it easy.